in a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back in. Mitch, fantastic intro on a fantastic afternoon.
It is Wednesday, my dudes.
I love, you know, Mitch, by the way, I've been meaning to tell you, we should switch our recording days to Wednesdays. It works much better for me. It'll always be Wednesdays, my dude, at least the offseason. You know, NFL season, we've got to hit it Tuesday, right? Because you got Thursday night football. So we got to get it out quicker. NFL offseason, let's push it to Wednesdays. But it is Wednesdays. It is Wednesday, my dudes, March 2nd, and we are recording this podcast. Mitch, a lot in store as always. We'll get into the news and notes of the sports world, the MLB lockout, a little update on that. I was gonna say put Rob Manfred in the pit of misery, but I know he's already there serving a long sentence and has no hope of getting out anytime soon, so we won't have to do that this week. But we will be talking about some other news there. And then the big part of this podcast, we're going to be starting a couple week series of looking at offseason needs for every NFL team. So we're going to give you our one big offseason move thing that teams should do. And we're going to go team by team today, starting in the AFC. So that's what we got in store today. Mitch, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Are you excited? You nervous? Palms are sweaty? You know, what are we, how are we, you know? What's up?
Yeah, my knees are a little bit weak. Arms are heavy. But I ain't nervous. I'm just ready to get this going. Let's go, baby. It's a new sports hour. It's a new week. It's Wednesday, my dudes. Let's get it rolling.
All righty. Yeah, I mean, let's jump right into it. We've got to start with the news. Las Noticias.
That is right. Let's jump into the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news!
Oh, yes, unfortunately, we have to start this news segment off with some bad news. Some bad, unsurprising news, but bad news nonetheless. The MLB season will for sure absolutely not be starting on time. If you have not been following, if you're a baseball fan, you have been. If you're not, the MLB has been in a lockout contract negotiations between the players union and the owners over a number of issues. Like, this isn't one particular thing. This is a number of differences between where the players stand and where the owners stand. And it has seemed for months and probably even longer that owners were not willing to play ball with the players, were not willing to meet halfway or make concessions in any significant way. And so it has led to a point where they have passed the negotiation deadline. Rob Manfred announced yesterday, I believe it was Tuesday, maybe Monday, but earlier this week, that the first two series of the season will be canceled. The soonest the season can now start is April 7th. But Mitch, this doesn't look like it's going to be any different anytime soon. We look securely in a stalemate with no hope moving forward. And ultimately it is just a huge disappointment for baseball fans who just want to enjoy the sport and want the players to be able to play and shine and want owners to get out of the way and let this sport happen. And it is extremely unfortunate what is going on.
Yeah. If you read my last article on the Sports Hour, guys.wordpress.com, make sure to go check that out. It didn't age well at all when this when this news came out. Be looking forward to another one of those. Here's the deal. I know that he's already in the pit of misery, but I can adjust his sentence.
Oh,
I can adjust his sentence. And Rob Manfred is now in a life sentence without the possibility of parole. Well,
this is great. This is a big moment on the Sports Hour, folks. We have Mitch has never given out a life sentence ever in the history of the pit of misery. And here you go, episode 121, almost 4 years into this. Rob Manfred goes into, can we put him in solitary confinement too?
Nope. He goes into the hole, into the pit.
He's got to go gen pop.
Yeah.
So you get shanked on a Tuesday.
How does a human being fuck this up that bad? I don't understand how he does that. I don't understand how the owners can screw this up that bad. I don't understand how Rob Manfred can screw this up that bad. This is a national tragedy. This is a tragedy for the world of sports. This is a tragedy for baseball. First time in 27 years that games have been canceled without the possibility of being made up. At the most, teams will play 156 games instead of the 162. I know people are saying, well, what are you crying about? It's only six games. Well, you know what? Those six games matter, dude. Those six games matter, and it matters more than just baseball. It matters for the negotiations that the players are looking for, because baseball, you know, baseball owners are making more and more money every year. And over the last 10 years or so, salaries haven't changed in baseball. So that's what they're looking for, and it's not happening. So you know what? I'm kind of just sick and tired of Rob Manfred. He should be banned from anything in sports. He should be banned from dude needs to go to Guantanamo Bay. That's what he needs to do. He needs to go to fucking Guantanamo Bay and serve a life sentence without the possibility of parole for his heinous crimes that he's done on the sport of baseball. And you know what? He's already serving that sentence right here in my little fake yard pit of misery. He needs to go to Guantanamo Bay in real life. Dude's a joke. Dude's a absolute monster. Dude is I can't even put words together how much I hate Rob Manfred.
You know, you look at the numbers and you compare what Major League Baseball players are compensated compared to their peers in other states, and it's not equitable. It's just not. And the players are trying to make it more equitable. And you look at the way that the major leagues treats minor league players, and sort of some of the scenarios we saw come about during COVID-19 and the pandemic and the lack of resources and the lack of support that they gave to minor league players and players working their way up. And what it seems like Major League Baseball tends to forget is that all of those superstars were at one point in that same boat. You know, everybody had to go through the ranks to get up there. And so everybody has that shared experience, and you can tell players looking out for one another and looking out for the future of baseball, the future players, by willing to sacrifice money now, willing to miss games now in order to solidify salaries and, you know, the negotiation ability for some of these players and future players. And so the problem is, and again, the unfortunate part is for baseball fans who we just don't know where this is going to go. Again, like, we've passed the deadline, games are being canceled, and it doesn't look like it's going to change. Where's the negotiation going to happen? And when are MLB owners going to pull their heads out of their ass to make some concessions? It will be interesting to see, but unfortunately, we're not going to get baseball for a while, it seems.
I think the easy cop-out answer is, well, they already make millions of dollars a year. They already make multi-millions. Oh, the league minimum's already $675,000. Why do they need more? That's not the point, though. The point is that it's a growing industry, and players aren't being compensated, proportionally speaking, to what the owners are making on with their teams and with their organizations.
Right. And these negotiations are not about how much money Fernando Tatis can make on his mega deal, right? Or how much Mike Trout at a maximum. It's about the low level players, the guys that are getting gypped out of money because major league teams take them up into their major league roster for the minimum amount of time they can until they have to pay them more, and then they send them back down to the minors. So those guys only make their minor league contract, despite the fact that they'll play in the main. Like, it's the manipulation of the system, the way that they abuse young and up and coming players, contractually, financially, right? They take advantage of those services, the arbitration process. That is what players are fighting for right now. That's the issue. And that's why, again, it seems like the consensus as far as baseball fans, and, you know, let us know if you feel otherwise, but it seems like the majority of fans are on the player's side as far as this goes, of understanding where the players are coming from and understanding that owners need to make concessions and that baseball needs to make concessions here. And ultimately it's the players that are going to get hurt if games are missed, and it's fans that are going to miss out.
Yeah. Yeah. If I talk any more about this, I'm going to blow a blood vessel. So
we'll continue to update as this continues, and hopefully within the next week or so, we'll get some positive news as far as the start of the 2022 Major League Baseball season. Mitch, let's talk and bring back a little segment here, the NBA storylines. Three storylines from the world of the NBA every single week here on the podcast until we hit NBA playoffs coming up in just, you know, under a couple months. End of April, we'll be in the midst of the NBA playoffs. But three storylines, Mitch, and I want to start out here with one of the best stories of this year, the Memphis Grizzlies, who right now are third in the West, just behind the Golden State Warriors right now. And they will push the Warriors for that number two seed in the West, which would be a huge improvement for this Memphis team, who, you know, just last season, they were the eighth seed, played in the play-in tournament, got in, had a series against Utah. They won that first game and then, you know, lost four straight. So got, you know, battle tested last year in the playoffs a bit, got that first taste, but they have certainly emerged this year, 43-20 on the year. And Mitch, the star of the show, unsurprisingly, Mr. Ja Morant. Ja Morant is been fantastic this year and an all-star player, but these last two games, as we come off this all-star break and as Memphis makes a run, he has scored 98 points in the last two games, 46 against the Chicago Bulls on the road in a win, and then 52 against the San Antonio Spurs the other night at home. And I've seen, you know, immediately ESPN and pundits and everyone is talking, should Ja Morant be in this MVP race? We know it's Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Who else is going to be in this mix for MVP? Well, Ja Morant is certainly making his case now, and with about 20 games left in the season, he could make an even bigger case and really put his name out there if Memphis climbs to the two or maybe even the one seed and he continues at this tear. But to score 46 and then 52 in back-to-back games, to have this team playing the way that it is, I don't know. What do you think? Is Ja legit MVP candidate? Should we be at least discussing it? Maybe not winning it, but like finishes top three in votes for sure. Top five. What do you think?
I mean, take Ja away from the Grizzlies and what do you have? I mean, his value to this team,
but like the 12th best team in the West, you know,
we're talking about the most valuable player. He is more valuable to his team than most. So absolutely, he should be in the conversation. We talked about it at the beginning of the year, I believe. The steady kind of increase of Ja's production and how we've just seen him progress each of his first 2 years and how he's gotten better. And then this year was the breakout year for him. I mean, he's averaging 27, 6 and 5 and 6 right now. 27, 6 and 6 right now. Dude's playing lights out. He is absolutely the most valuable player on the Grizzlies team. And if he's more valuable to that team than most, to his own specific team the most, then absolutely he should be in the conversation.
Yeah, I can only imagine that there's only a handful of players in the NBA averaging that same line, 27, 6 and 6. I bet it's Giannis, LeBron, and
did you see that buzzer beater he hit the other night?
At half against the Spurs. I mean, he catches it. I mean, they throw it baseline to baseline on the inbounds with just a few seconds, you know, maybe even milliseconds left. And Ja catches it in midair and sort of flips towards the bucket and without touching the ground, like catches it, turns, throws it up while in floating in air, seemingly, and makes it at the half. And it's just, it's those sort of moments, Mitch, that are going to stick in the minds of voters when it comes time to pick a name for the MVP. And people are going to think about moments, and they're going to think about performances and excitement. And that is Ja Morant. Ja Morant is exciting. He's one of the best young players in this league, and he is emerging before our eyes. And that is exciting. I don't think he's MVP this year. I think Giannis, I think Jokic, I think Embiid have better arguments right now than Ja Morant. But again, there's still about 20 games left. Memphis is the 3 seed in their conference. If they could get to the 2 or 1 and he continues at this pace, he's certainly going to have a pretty good argument by season's end.
And you mentioned a name there that we had a similar discussion about before he won his first MVP, which was Giannis. Giannis was great and super valuable to his team. Mm-hmm. He was outperforming most people and was more valuable to his team than anyone else. But it just wasn't his time yet, because there were some other players right there at that time that were performing just as good, if not better. So Ja will get there. I'm agreeing with you. I don't think this year is his year, but an outstanding season from him nonetheless.
No doubt. Let's go to another storyline, and this one hurts. This one hurts me, Mitch, as a Lakers fan, and that is my Lakers. But listen, it's okay. You can laugh at me. The Lakers are ass. The Lakers are ass. It is awful.
It is
embarrassing. And post All-Star break, they are 0-3 with losses to the Clippers, to the Pelicans, and to the Mavericks last night. The most notable, it's sort of the, I think a great summation of this season was the Sunday loss to the Pelicans, in which the Lakers lost at home 123-95. They were heckled by their fans in the stands. People on the bench, players on the court, didn't matter if you were LeBron or Dwight Howard, fans were talking shit, and just rightfully so, because the Lakers are down bad, Mitch. They're 1-6 over the last 7 games. The only win coming against Utah in the final game before the All-Star break. They are down bad, and they are not in a good spot when it comes to the standings. And this is a team that is in the play-in tournament right now. And certainly, you know, no Anthony Davis right now. He's not healthy. And sure, you know, you understand that that's going to have an impact. But everything else around LeBron James is just not working. And it hasn't all season. And the Lakers are 27-34. They're the 9 right now. So they would be in the play-in. In fact, against the Pelicans. So maybe that wouldn't be good for them right now, but they're just 2 games back of the Pelicans, who are 10. Portland's also 2 games back. San Antonio's 3.5 back of the Lakers right now. So, I mean, they're not out of it. They need to be fighting for the play-in. What happened over 2 years where the Lakers went from dominating the NBA in the bubble playoffs to win that championship? They beat everybody, and they pretty much handled everybody that playoffs. How did they go from that to now they're going to be under 500 fighting for a play? And even if they get in, they're the 8 seed. It's wild.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing at you. It's
laughable.
You LA fans are so funny. You LA fans are so funny. You got so excited over 2 COVID shortened championships with the Dodgers.
Oh my God. Okay.
And you got so excited. Yeah, you got so excited. You got so excited. And now we're going to put them up to the test, and they can't do it.
Back Mitch, when was the last time your team even won championships? Okay.
That's not the point.
Bears win. Let me know.
That's not the point. That's not the point.
You're just talking shit on LA fans. I'm just saying. Okay.
No, you guys are just so funny. I mean, it's just funny.
Listen, I'm not even upset about this. They're just doo-doo. They're just doo-doo. I know.
Okay. But on a serious note, I'll straighten up here a little bit for you. I'll straighten up a little bit just so I can make the serious point. On a serious note, I don't think big threes work all the time. We saw it.
Are we really counting this as a big three? I mean, I know Russell Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, and Anthony
Davis.
Okay,
but this isn't 2017, Mitch. All right, we're talking about Russell Westbrook after he's gone through OKC and Houston and Washington. Let's not pretend.
So do you want to make the same art? No, so
is Russell Westbrook an all-star? Is Russell Westbrook an all-star?
No, but
okay. Is he an all-star? Answer the question. He's not
an all-star.
Okay, but so then how could it be a big three?
You can't tell me that wasn't in mind. You can't tell me that wasn't in mind when they brought Russell Westbrook in. If you're going to use, it's not that same time anymore. Are we going to tell you the same thing about the Boston Celtics big three? Kevin Garnett was on the back end of his career. Ray Allen was on the back end of his career.
Yeah, but they were still all-star level players when they're playing at that time.
Russell Westbrook is an all-star level still?
No, he's not. He hasn't made an all-star in years. He's not. I mean, he's just not. Listen, they tried to bill it as a big three. But, I mean, this was always about LeBron and AD, in my opinion. This was always going to be about that pairing and whatever the hell else they put around them.
But that wasn't even my point. So let me just get there. I mean, the health of AD is a big deal, right? When you don't have the other guy there, if you want to call it a big two, because apparently Russell Westbrook doesn't contribute to a big three anymore. If you want to call
me, he doesn't look like he's contributing very much.
No, I'm not saying, that's not what I'm saying.
I know you're not saying that. I know you're not saying that. I'm making a joke. All right.
Anyway, the health matters. The health does matter. And I know that last week I said LeBron is starting to show his age and you immediately countered with the numbers, which is just fine and dandy. He is putting up great numbers. I don't think that he can will a team like he used to be able to in Cleveland. That was my point that I was trying to make last week. And I think that still applies here, that, you know, he just can't will a team like he used to be able to. He needs guys around him and he doesn't have that right now with an often injured Anthony Davis and a Russell Westbrook who isn't playing to, I think, his full potential. And he's certainly not playing like he did over the previous few years. So,
and a bunch of scrubs. And I think that's like what matters. It's the roster building. Yeah, that's 100% the roster. And you know, it's fascinating because the Lakers have tried to build this team the way that the LeBron teams were built in Miami, the way they were built, you know, even in some ways in Cleveland before, where, you know, the second time at least, where you're really gutting the roster around LeBron, pairing him with stars and using that to you know, to carry you. But the difference here, and you brought up a really good point, is he's older now. And as great as LeBron is, and LeBron can still do fantastic things, and, you know, playoff LeBron is still playoff LeBron. And if they make the playoffs, he's going to look fantastic in that series. They could get swept. He's going to do his thing. He's going to do LeBron things. That's LeBron James. But he is not able to carry a bum-ass Cavs team like he could when he was 23 or 24, right? I mean, it's just not the same. So they should have built this differently with more depth, more options, with more around him. And, you know, part of it is the oft-injured young star that they paired him with, right? If Anthony Davis is healthy this whole time, this whole thing looks a lot better. But they invested in a young star to pair with LeBron James, and that guy hasn't stayed healthy. And it's not a good situation in LA.
And I know that this may be kind of a mute point and maybe a very small part of this conversation, but I know that LeBron has a lot of say in who comes in and who leaves on a roster, right? They're asking LeBron what he needs and what he doesn't want there. And to me, it just seems like LeBron's not a very good GM. Maybe you shouldn't totally rely on what he needs and what he doesn't need, because clearly it hasn't been working. So why would you keep asking for his input there? And I think that went back to what he had said, you know, what the whole thing was at the All-Star break when he was a little miffed that they didn't make a move, that nothing happened. Like, maybe it's not happening for a reason, because what you're suggesting to bring in isn't working. So they need to try something different.
Yeah, certainly Russell Westbrook was not the move. The reports are that apparently Westbrook and the Lakers have mutually agreed to find a new destination for the point guard in the offseason. No shit, because it sucked in L.A., and that was a bad decision. So unsurprising news there. We'll see, I guess, how they pivot. But
I hate to shit on our buddy Jordan Fox, but watch the Sacramento Kings make a move for Russell Westbrook.
Oh, my God. Oh,
and they bring in another guard. Just
I
bring
hope
in
not
another
for
guard.
Sake. You just no, I'm I, sorry, I can't, Jordan, I can't. That you even had to now I you kid. Have to ponder that. I'm sorry.
I'm kidding, but you know.
Final NBA storyline here, and that is, you know, a trade we didn't really get to talk about as it happened over the Super Bowl and stuff, but James Harden ending up in Philly. He's making his Philadelphia home debut tonight, but he's played a couple games with the Sixers since being shipped over to Philly from Brooklyn. Harden has played fantastic since he's come to Philly, which is just a very interesting thing. He wasn't really healthy in Brooklyn, seemed pretty out of shape in Brooklyn, was very intent on not playing in Brooklyn. Suddenly he gets traded, gets a little all-star break, comes over, and he looks great. He looks like James Harden, and it just makes you wonder, where was that guy for the last 6 months to a year? Huh? That's all I'm asking. You know,
I mean, he resembled more Cream Bigums, the Spice Adams character that he does on his Instagram, than James Harden. I mean, how does a guy lose 40 pounds in 2 days? I don't understand. I don't understand how that works. But you know, we saw, and I know you saw it, I saw it. This guy performs exceptionally well in his debuts for new teams. This guy, I think that Brooklyn was a toxic situation with all the up in the air. They attempted a big three there. It didn't work. I think they played a total of like 17, 18 games together over the course of 2 years. One was Kevin Durant sitting out for the entirety of the career or in the entirety of the season. Kyrie Irving can't get his shit together. So it was really just James Harden was the only active big three guy there. And it just didn't work. Just didn't work in Brooklyn.
Yeah, you know, it will be interesting to see come playoff time, you know, how this plays out for the Nets and Harden. But in two games with the Nets, he's played in two games, both of them wins against the Timberwolves and the Knicks. He's averaging 28 points and 14 assists and 9 rebounds. So there you go. I mean, that's what James Harden's doing right now in Philly. And again, playoff time will matter. Embiid, Harden, Doc Rivers in Philly, how do they fare in a playoff series? But certainly things looking good so far there in Philadelphia. Mitch, let's get to our weekly Kraken update. The Kraken, last time we talked, we're on a bit of a losing streak. And Mitch, the losing streak continues. Since we've last spoke, they've played two games, an overtime loss against the Bruins, and then a 3-1 loss against the San Jose Sharks on Sunday. They do play tonight at 8 p.m. Wednesday, March 2nd, against Nashville. So chance to break what is a 7-game losing streak right now. They do get the point because of the overtime loss, right? So 0-1-1, right? But they are 16-34-5 on the season. And this is my question for you this week, Mitch. Are we being too easy on the Kraken? We've been Kraken apologists, let's be honest, for the whole season. And they're an expansion team and probably going to, you know, they probably weren't going to be very good. And it's all about building and sort of, you know, figuring out what the team looks like, the foundations. But this is not good and it's not getting any better. You would at least like to see towards the back half of the season some improvement, right? Some momentum. They're going in the opposite direction. Should we start being critical of this coaching staff of this organization? So we like what, like, are we wrong here or should we still keep sipping the Kool-Aid?
I think if at the end of year two, nothing changes, then sure. I don't think we should be too brutal on the Kraken right now. Brand new organization. And let's just be honest, two tough matchups this last week, Bruins and Sharks. Those are two playoff caliber teams right there that they're losing. You know, one, they took the Bruins to overtime and they, you know, a 3-1 loss to the Sharks. It's not the end of the world yet. And we shouldn't be too critical on the Kraken just yet. I think we should just be like, take this first season in, absorb it, get to know everyone. But hey, year two, if we don't see any improvement, it's go time and gloves come off.
Now we're calling for some heads.
Gloves are coming off. We're ready to throw down center ice.
So, we're about to get some penalty minutes. Plenty in the box.
Oh yeah, you know. for instigating and fighting. So we're getting doubled up here. 10 minutes in the penalty box. Yeah. Power play for the rest of the season for everyone. If the Kraken doesn't keep
this up, folks, that was all the hockey references we could throw in. in a couple minutes. That's all we
Flashing.
Got. We
are tapped there you out. Go. There's another
we are tapped out. No, you know, 2 months left of the season, all of March, all of April, about 27 games left for the Kraken. So there is still time for some positive momentum. And you are right. I'm just getting a little disillusioned is all. Okay. I just want to see a win every once in a while. We don't have high expectations for our Kraken in year one, but we just need some dubs. Let's see some dubs. Let's get a win against the Predators tonight. Kraken beat Predators mascot to mascot. So I feel good about that. Mitch, to wrap up the news, let's the last little bit here, NASCAR, a little update, racing in Fontana, my old stomping grounds of the good old IE Inland Empire. You love to see it. I used to be able to see Auto Club in the distance off the freeway there, but another race into this NASCAR season. You sort of were tracking it. How was it?
It was another great race. I'll tell you what, this brand new next gen car is working. Exciting stuff. Kyle Larson gets the W there. Austin Dillon, second. Eric Jones, third. Then Daniel Suarez and Joey Logano rounding out the top five. Great run for Daniel Suarez and Trackhouse Racing. That is the team owned by Pitbull, Mr. 305, Mr. Worldwide, Dale Earnhardt himself.
Are you serious? Mr. Worldwide owns a NASCAR team?
Yes. They started their team last year.
Wow.
That was their first full-time year. Him and, Marks is his last name. I'm forgetting the guy's first name, Brent Marks. Not Brent Marks. It's something like that. They own this team together, Trackhouse Racing, and has ascended very quickly. Has become a very competitive team. They got a good young driver, Daniel Suarez, who came over from NASCAR Mexico. Is a Xfinity Series champion just a few years ago. Fantastic driver. Puts this team top five this week. I think he's going to win a race at some point this year. But in reference to the new car, the racing has stayed fantastic. Guys were spinning out by themselves. I mean, coming off turn four, that was probably the most likely spot that was going to happen, where it happened a lot. It happened in practice, qualifying, and race day. Guys with plenty of talents were doing it. So that shows me that this car is putting it more in the driver's hands. It's not glued to the track anymore. They've raised the ride height a little bit, so it's not sucked down to the track, creating a negative pressure. This is really becoming a more competitive, more racy car that's going to really showcase drivers' abilities more than just who can put out the best equipment. Still had the tired wheel issues, and I know I mentioned that with Daytona. Right. If you want a good in-depth detail of that, go listen to the Dale Jr. download. Dale Earnhardt Jr. Goes into depth with that and explains maybe some suggestions of what they need to do, but it's becoming more of a conversation now. Like I was talking about last week, how this needs to become a conversation. It's starting to become a conversation, and I think that they'll figure that out. But so far, two great races. These 2 mile, mile and a half tracks in the past could get boring because the car wasn't really being put in the hands of the drivers. And so now that it is, these tracks are, and especially Auto Club, which is known for its bumpy surface, it needs a new repave. It was really exciting, fun racing to watch. So my guy, Kyle Larson, gets the W, first win of the year for him. And next week, I believe they head to Las Vegas. So,
okay. So far so good. You love to see it.
Love to see it. I mean, this is exactly what NASCAR needs. So,
all right. Where other leagues that have fallen behind continue to fail, like Major League Baseball, look at NASCAR doing some things different and at least trying something. And you know, that's all you can ask as a fan.
And they needed this. They needed this because absolutely, it was on the decline, and now it's producing really exciting racing. So, love to see it.
100%. All right, Mitch, we, as promised last week, we talked on this podcast that we did a top five in a forgotten all-star. We decided that this week we would switch roles. Mitch is usually the top five guy. That's his thing. It's Mitch Moe's top five list. But this week I've got the top five and Mitch is going to quiz me on the forgotten all-star. So if you don't mind, buddy, I'm going to go first here.
Yeah.
Okay.
One stipulation.
Okay.
You have to do the jingle.
I have to sing it? I'm gonna call it Mitch Moe's top five list of the week, though.
But it's your top five of the
yeah,
list.
But how do I sing that? It's not the Dallas. Same. I'm just not gonna know. See, I'm just not trying it. I'm not going for it. I'm doing it one take, and I'm just gonna it's still Mitch Moe's, but yes. You know, the top five, before we get into it, this is why we're talking about it this week. The NFL, we brought this up before, but the NFL announced some of the teams that would be playing in the international games. We know that the NFL likes to play some international games. The Green Bay Packers, for the first time, will be playing a game overseas in England. The Packers, along with the Saints, will be playing hosting their games as the home team in Tottenham. Hotspur Stadium in London, while the Jags again return to London. They will host their game in Wembley. The Arizona Cardinals are hosting the game in Mexico City, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be the host of the NFL's first game in Germany this next season. And it got me thinking about some more interesting destinations that the NFL could potentially play some future games.
Ooh, okay.
So in this week's edition of Mitch Moe's top five list of the week.
Nailed it.
Thank you. We are talking about the five places the NFL should add to place some games. I'm talking regular season games, some more destinations, because I like the London games great. We talked about this love that they're playing games in Germany. They already play in Mexico City, which is a huge thing, and love to see that once a year. But there are opportunities to expand. So that is what the top five is today. And I'm going to start with a pretty easy one, a pretty simple one. Maybe this is straightforward. Maybe you didn't think about this. Maybe it's too easy. Is it too simple? Let's just go to our neighbors up north. Let's play a game in Canada. You know, we have the CFL. So this is my idea, because I have ideas with all this. It's not just that would be fun, Mitch. This is the event. Doubleheader with the CFL. A crossover event with the Canadian Football League. You get a CFL game to kick off the doubleheader, and then you follow it up with an NFL game right after that. You play in Toronto, Montreal, like whatever city, but you get CFL versus CFL. NFL versus NFL, same day, same place, back to back, a big event out of it, crossover. I think it makes a lot of sense.
I love it. I would also love to see a CFL versus NFL preseason game.
And that's something I thought about too. Definitely would work in the preseason as well as a crossover event.
Or, whoa.
Oh, uh-oh.
Pro Bowl sucks. Let's do a CFL versus NFL Pro Bowl.
CFL All-Stars versus the worst team in the NFL. How about that?
Well, I take the CFL.
I don't know.
Those teams are pretty good.
They are pretty good, but NFL teams are pretty good. So that could be pretty equitable. I don't know. So Canada, that is the first move. It's right there. I know we're
thinking like Atlantic,
but like let's just, you know, pop up. Little game, little fun.
So, what are you thinking? Like Toronto, Montreal?
Montreal, yes. Probably one of those. And again, I love the doubleheader with the CFL versus CFL matchup.
Then you go NFL
after that. The second one, that says number five, number four on the list. So these are in number one's got to be the best of the best.
That's a great idea. It's going to get even better.
Number four for me is Brazil. We got to go to South America, and the best place to go in South America, a place that loves a little cousin of football over there, football, as they would like to call it, soccer. Let's go to Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, Maracana Stadium, which was the host of the opening ceremonies of the 2016 Summer Games. It is a huge 80,000 plus stadium. Let's go into South America. Let's play a game. In Brazil, it'd be one off, just like the Mexico City game, but let's expand to a new continent. That's where I would go.
The Cristo de Redentor Bowl.
Oh, there we go. You know, it's funny that you brought up bowl names, because I do have one later for one of my ideas. I think you'll love it. I'd love to workshop some with you too, because that's good. So that's number four. Number five, Canada. Number four, Brazil. Number three, this was another easy one for me. Absolute has to happen. Australia.
Yeah.
Australians love football. And just like the CFL, Mitch, I want a doubleheader Australian rules football beforehand and then an NFL versus NFL game afterwards. You play it in Perth. You play it in Sydney, one of those places. But I love the cross. You know, they've got their own little version there, the Australian rules football. Like, let's play that beforehand, televise that on NBC, ESPN. Like, let's expand that to America.
Yeah.
And follow that up with an NFL game.
Australian rules football is so cool, too. Like, now, screw the college Outback Bowl. This is the Outback Bowl.
Right. There you go. Yes. Yes. This would be the true Outback Bowl, not the Outback Steakhouse Bowl.
Like, right.
Yes. So, yeah, that's number three there, Australia. Number two, I don't know why we don't do this already. I think the NFL has just kind of overthought this one.
Okay.
We need a regular season game in Hawaii.
Oh, Mitch, absolutely.
The Pro Bowl's not there anymore. They're building a new stadium, right? Aloha Stadium, not there anymore. So this is a work in progress. But this is, it's not just play a game in Hawaii, Mitch. This is the idea.
Okay.
Regular season finale, two non-playoff teams, and you should, in this is a flexed game where the NFL should put in the worst matchup they can. The two worst teams. You send them to Hawaii. You call it the Beach Bowl. And after such a horrible season of losing, you get to end the season off in Hawaii, stay for an extra week as you wrapped up. And it's, you know what? Hey, the season sucked where the Detroit Lions were 2-15. But hey, we got to play the last game in Hawaii. That's not a bad consolation. I love that.
You might see an increase in tanking. I'm not going to lie.
Players will be from week 15. They're going to be like, all right, so we just lose every week. We're going to be in a while. All right. But yeah, I didn't think about that. Unintended consequence. Okay. So
you get to go play football score. Yeah.
Beach Bowl for that. Any other ideas there as far as that, what you'd call that bowl game? Cause you had a good one there with the Brazil. I'd call the Hawaii one the Beach Bowl, but you like that? Is that good? Is that bad? Where else could we go?
I mean, the Aloha Bowl, but I know that's taken up by, I think that's taken up by college football already, isn't
there? They call it the Hawaii
Bowl. I like the Beach Bowl. Why not?
I just like the alliteration. You know, it's good,
but
that's number two, folks. So Hawaii's number two. The number one, and I'm not going to.
Hold on. You're cutting out way back.
All right, Mitch, that was number two. So my number one, the next place that the NFL needs to figure out a play game. And I'm not going to lie here. I did not check if this was even possible. I don't know. I don't know the logistics. Ooh. And this would certainly maybe not be a game fans could attend. But the NFL should host a football game in the Colosseum in Rome.
Oh, that's tricky.
And again, I don't know the dimensions of the Colosseum. No idea if it's long enough to play, to put a full field in there. And again, certainly you wouldn't be able to put fans in the stands there, but the spectacle of playing football in the Colosseum would be incredible and just one of a kind. And I just can't think of anything cooler. So don't know if it could happen, but that's the dream. Play a game in the Roman Colosseum in Rome, in Italy. That's number one.
Man, that last one, all the potential in the world, just the logistics.
I have to Google.
You could do a televised event though. People pop up Jumbotrons like no one's business. Seating outside the stadium to watch it on Jumbotrons surrounding the Colosseum.
Shut down the street and put bleachers up around the now we're talking.
You could do that.
That would be such a cool. I don't know if it's even big enough, but that's the number one. So that was the top five.
It's a historical landslide too, but screw it. We're playing football.
Who cares? That's where gladiators fought. They battled.
That's
Mitch,
right.
They battled each other on the ground, and we want to see a battle on the gridiron. So yes, that's the top five.
From one to five.
Again, number one, in Rome in the Coliseum, number two in Hawaii, number three, Australia, number four, Brazil, and number five, Canada. The next five places the NFL should play games. Honorable mentions here. A few ones that I thought of. Paris. Paris is an easy one. Continuing in Europe, Paris is a cool city. You know, expanding into France, all love there. Tokyo.
The Escargot Bowl.
Tokyo, Japan, huge population. I don't even know if they like or they'd care about American football over there. I don't know the interest level in Asia and specifically in Japan, but would certainly be an interesting market to target there. And then the third one, the least feasible, but almost was my number one, was the moon. The NFL should figure out a play game on the moon. Pop up bubble, put a field on there, send two teams out. Let's play a game on the moon.
I mean, we have the technology now.
I mean, it's got to be out there.
We got to have
it. It's got to be out there, right? So anyway, that's the top five this week. Thanks for letting me take over your segment, Mitch. I had a lot of fun with that.
Of course. You are welcome back anytime to the top five, my friend. So
appreciate it.
But Dallin, part of this thing was I was going to take over your segment here. We're going to do a forgotten all-star. Last week, Juwan Howard, great forgotten all-star, very relevant at the time. I love it. Since we just got done talking a little football, I'm going to stay in the world of football.
Ooh-hoo.
I'm going to stay in the world of football. So a forgotten Pro Bowler, if you will.
Okay.
Let's start off with, so just to remind people, three clues. And then you get three guesses to figure it out. So here we go. The forgotten all-star. Clue number one. I was a first round draft pick out of LSU. Number two, I won a Super Bowl in my rookie year. Number three, despite only rushing for 1,000 yards twice in my career, I seceded another 1,000-yard rusher.
So they came after a different 1,000-yard rusher.
And then rushed for 1,000 yards in their first 2 years, yes.
In each of their first 2 years?
Each of their first 2 years.
Interesting. Okay, so first-round pick from LSU, 1,000-yard rusher, in back-to-back of their first season, and they also seceded another 1,000-yard rusher. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with my first guess, and I don't know if this player is a former Tiger, but okay. I'm just going to throw this out because this is the first name that came to my mind, and I feel like I just got to guess something if it feels right. Maurice Jones-Drew.
That is incorrect, my
okay.
friend.
Okay. All right.
All right. You got two guesses left. You're still good.
I do have two guesses left. Can I get one hint here? One just tiny hint. Pre-2000, post-2000?
Post-2000.
Post-2000. Okay, so within the last 20 years.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to go weird nerd Mitch and throw someone from the 80s out there.
That's all right. No, I mean, listen, I just want to make sure I know the playing field here. Okay, so running back, first round pick out of LSU. I'm going to guess, and I don't know that this answer is right, but one of the only other LSU backs I can think of. I'm going to go Leonard Fournette.
That's strike two, buddy.
I don't think he was a Pro Bowler. So that, I think that's the issue. I don't think maybe Fournette was a Pro Bowler in his rookie year, but
I think he was. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, man. Okay. And I don't know who played running back before him in the Jags. That was the other issue there. I had no idea. Okay. Gotta get an LSU running back. 1,000 yards in the first two seasons. Seceded another 1,000-yard rusher. First round draft pick.
From LSU. I thought that might have I thought that was probably the most helpful hint, but
unless you can't think of LSU running backs, then you're certainly out of
luck. That's true.
Then you're certainly out of
luck. Then you're SOL, yeah.
Shoot. I'm just going to guess it. I don't think I'm right. I'm going to guess Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
That is strike number three, buddy.
Unfortunate. Who was it?
This would be Joseph Addai.
Joe, oh my gosh. Yeah, see, I did not know he even played for LSU. So there you, that is a great pull.
Joseph Addai was a first round, 30th pick overall draft pick to the Indianapolis Colts. He succeeded Edgerrin James, who was a 1,000-yard rusher the year before he came, and then won a Super Bowl in 2006 with the Colts in his rookie year, where he rushed for 1,081 and 7 touchdowns. Possibly his best year, which was his Pro Bowl year, 2007, 1,072 and 12 touchdowns in that effort. So Joseph Addai, your forgotten all-star. One-time Pro Bowler. He only made it that one year. And actually, he never rushed for more than 900 yards the rest of his career and only had four more years in the league before eventually retiring. So
there you go. Well, that was a great pull, Mitch. I am ashamed. In my defeat, Maurice Jones-Drew wasn't even an LSU running back, and he definitely didn't win a Super Bowl. I missed badly on some of those, but that was a great pick. That was well done.
I got to take a little bit of blame here too. I said it was going to be a tough one, and maybe I should have.
No, hey, I mean, I deserve the challenge, and I failed. So shame on me.
Yeah, damn it, shame on you.
Mitch, before we get to the mid-roll here, we got to wrap this up with our weekly NFL draft. The NFL Combine going right on right now in Indianapolis, started on Monday, Tuesday. We'll go through the weekend as we see testing, interviews, etc. Most of the testing doesn't start, at least the performative testing, till Thursday. That's the televised, you know, you watch the guys run. That'll be quarterbacks, wide receivers, I believe, is where it starts Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Today was interviews for a lot of those players. So that's kind of where we're at in the combine process. But one of the more interesting changes in the draft landscape was Mel Kiper's latest mock draft, in which he had North Carolina State tackle Ikem Ekwonu as the first pick in the draft to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we talked about Ikem Ekwonu and our player to know before the NFL draft, probably about maybe 2 months ago, when Dane Brugler of The Athletic was the first person to really depart from the consensus of Aiden Hutchinson, and he had Ikem Ekwonu as the number one pick, and it really sort of opened the door for this conversation, and that has only built over the last couple months. You can watch the betting odds increase ever more highly in his favor as it continues, and a lot of people suspect that he will have a good week in Indianapolis and help his draft stock there. It seems at this present moment that the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to go offensive line with this first pick. That's what the reports are saying. Sources inside say it's either going to be Evan Neal or Ikem Ekwonu, and that's kind of where it sits now. So it is, I wanted to get your thoughts. I think both are obviously fantastic prospects. We've talked and you know, put ourselves out there on the Evan Neal number one overall, and I still stand by that, but it certainly is interesting to see Ekwonu rise, and a guy like Mel Kiper Jr. putting him there really sort of opens the door for that national conversation on this prospect.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that we had talked about rising in you know, previous episodes. We had talked about him rising up the draft boards. It seems like Evan Neal may not be the consensus guy for Jacksonville to take if they're going to take what we think they should take. Ikem Ekwonu automatically becomes part of that conversation. So I think that this will be a guy that we continue to see rise up draft boards, and it'll become more and more of a conversation between Neal, Ekwonu, and I think still Hutchinson is still in that conversation of who's going to go number one overall to Jacksonville.
Yeah, absolutely. Will be interesting to see. And maybe does this become a trend, right? Do other draft analysts start moving Ekwonu up to number one instead? We'll see if they follow suit here from Mr. Mel Kiper. But Mitch, before we get to the mid-roll, the player to know before the NFL draft, as I do every week. Last week, we talked about quarterback Matt Corral out of Ole Miss. It was a big week ahead of him in Indianapolis. But this week, I want to talk about a player who I believe will be a first round draft pick, who right now is maybe a fringe first round draft pick, probably more likely viewed in the second round. And that is Baylor defensive back Jalen P. Petrie. I say defensive back, Mitch, because what I love about Petrie and why I believe he will be a first round pick is his versatility. He's a slot corner. He's a box safety. He's a nickel linebacker. He is all of those things you look for in that versatile piece. And an ever-changing world in the NFL where you need guys to cover tight ends, athletic tight ends, running backs out of the backfield, quarterbacks that can be on the move. You got to have athletes and guys all around and versatility on the defensive end. And that's exactly what Jalen Petrie gives you. These are his snaps by position in 2021 with the Baylor Bears. 600 snaps in the slot, 122 snaps in the box, 153 snaps on the defensive line. So that's an offset formations where he is the edge on that side, but he's basically a linebacker. Again, like I said, nickel linebacker, dime linebacker, depends on your formation, but that's the kind of versatility Jalen Petrie has. Was number one in run defense grade among cornerbacks this season, according to PFF. And again, that versatility, that do everything type skill set for Jalen Petrie, I think is going to matter for teams. There's a lot of good corners in this draft, and many that we've talked about already, Sauce Gardner, Trent McDuffie. There's obviously Derek Stingley Jr. from LSU. And you have Kyle Hamilton, the safety, who is similar in his versatility, but obviously a different role with his size, 6'4". He's almost a linebacker. Petrie, 6 foot, 197, more of a true slot corner, but he does have that box safety, other capabilities. And I think he will be an intriguing player. My favorite fit right now, and where I have him going in my mock draft 1.0, Mitch, is to the Kansas City Chiefs at the end of the first round, helping replace Dan Sorensen, potentially Tyrann Mathieu. They move their safeties up into the box a lot. They need somebody to guard tight ends, right, running backs in that regard. Petrie, I think, could fill into the slot, could fill that safety role, and could do a lot of things in that defense. So Jalen Petrie, that's the player to know before the NFL draft. Again, corner, secondary piece out of Baylor, potentially a second round pick. I think he's going to end up being a first rounder and end up moving up boards as the draft, as it gets closer and closer. But that is the player to know this week.
Yeah, you mentioned the snaps that that he played at each position, and this is the way the league is headed. More versatile guys, the better. And if you can line up this guy in the slot, on the edge, in the second level, is that much more valuable. He can play multiple different spots. So I like the addition of Jalen Petrie to your players to know. Great ad there.
Yes, thanks. I mean, we only have a couple more months of these, maybe about 7 or 8 before we hit the draft. So, and I'm not going to lie, it's getting a little thin. I'm having to pull a little bit from players I've done quite a bit of these as we've got probably maybe 20 or so now. And that will continue.
You're going to have to find like that fourth round sneaky guy.
I will, right before the end, the last two or three are going to be like fifth round flyer, seventh round, like this Mr. guy's going to make a roster. I don't know about that, but, we'll have to mix it up a bit, but, guys, that'll do it for the news as we wrap up here. And let's hit a mid-roll. When we come back, we'll get into our NFL offseason needs, starting with the AFC. So stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening. But if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back into the Sports Hour with Mitch Mo and Dallin. We hope you had a nice break there. Caught that mid-roll. Make sure to go on anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, to become a contributor of the Sports Hour. We'd love to hear from you too. Like, as we mentioned, we can hear those voice messages that you leave from us. We'd love to love to have you be a part of the conversation. But Dallin, right now, we got to get into a little bit of NFL. Free agency's coming up, drafts coming up. We need to see some teams make some moves. And that not every team is perfect. Okay. Every team can always improve just a little bit better. Perfection is unachievable. So we need to find. I know, right?
You're teaching light. Mitch is dropping. Are you Ted Lasso out here dropping bombs?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm like Confucius of the sports hour. You know, it's like, Mitch Mose.
That is true.
Perfection is unachievable.
I mean, you're very Confucius-like. I'd agree with you.
I disagree, actually. But let's get into the AFC team needs. There is something that every one of these teams needs to just get better, some more than others.
Absolutely.
But let's start in the AFC East. Let's start with the Buffalo Bills. And I think there's a couple different things that we could go with this, Dallin. And I would like you to start of where we think that the Buffalo Bills may need to add this offseason just to get over that hump. I mean, we're talking about Super Bowl contenders here last year, but they need something to add to maybe get over that hump to be serious Super Bowl contenders.
Yeah, you know, the Bills came within an overtime period, a coin flip, essentially. Right, of beating the Chiefs in the divisional round and having a shot to go to the Super Bowl. And this team is very close. This team is very close. There's a number of marginal improvements. But the one move I think I'd like to see them make, and it's not the popular one that you're going to see on websites of analysts talking about the defensive line, maybe even the offensive line continue to prove that. I think the Bills need to double down on a strength and continue to add in the secondary, and specifically the cornerback position, because the safety position, they have done very well. They found great value there with like Troy and Poyer, and they're getting the most out of those positions. You have Tre'Davious White, one of the best young corners in the league, undoubtedly, in my opinion, but he struggled with health this year. And you have Taron Johnson in the slot. You've got a couple other guys that are good, but not great. And passing attacks are only getting better, and there's only going to be more talented QBs in the AFC as the years come. Like, we might even get more. You know, Aaron Rodgers could be in Denver, right? Somebody could go to Pittsburgh. I mean, it could be even better in this conference having to play against the best quarterbacks in the league. So adding to your secondary and adding to a strength and making it even better is the way that I would go, whether you're adding a young player in free agency or you're using that first-round pick, the late end of the first round at a corner. So that's what I would go for the Bills adding in the secondary, specifically cornerback.
Specifically corner. Okay. Yeah. I like it. I like it. I mean, you can never have too many good defensive players. That was, Bill Parcells had said one time, you can never have too many good linebackers. Right. I think that plays true at any defensive position. You can never have too many good of each position. I know we talked about one. I got another one that I'm just going to briefly mention too. They need a reliable running back. I mean, this team just absolutely has not been able to run the football. But I think in conjunction with that, adding a reliable running back situation that's not Devin Singletary and Zach Moss and some combination of another third one, add a secondary wide receiver option, another weapon for Josh Allen to use at his disposal. Look, Cole Beasley's not going to be coming back. Gabriel Davis is just fine, but he's not a serious weapon.
Are you sure? I don't know. I mean, that divisional round was record-breaking what he did, and he did also have a good season. So is it a case of not affording to have enough patience with Gabriel Davis to see if he actually becomes that guy? Like, he wasn't a high pick, right? Maybe, he wasn't a player you invested in highly. And maybe with their timeline, they can't afford to see if that guy really becomes a true number two.
And that may be the case. That may be the case. But if you can get a late first round wide receiver to add to that thing, that's just going to open up everything else for Stephon Diggs. And if Gabriel Davis is the guy, it's going to open it up for him, because now they have to cover a third guy. So I think adding a secondary or a tertiary wide receiver to that option for Josh Allen to use as disposable would be great. But I think equally as much, find a reliable run game, because Devin Singletary and Zach Moss, that combination isn't the answer. That hasn't been the answer for the last 2 years. So maybe they need to find something. I mean, the Cleveland Browns have two great wide receivers or two great running backs. Why wouldn't you make a move for a Kareem Hunt, a guy that you could add that could catch the ball out of the backfield, something Josh Allen can use at his disposal through the air? Why wouldn't you use something or try to make a move for something like that? So those are my two. I think that the tertiary wide receiver might be a little bit more beneficial in the short run. But long-term, they need to find – long-term being the next 3, 4, 5 years, they need to find a more reliable running source.
All right, Mitch, let's go to the New England Patriots here. Playoff team last season with the rookie Mac Jones. And, you know, first off, this is going to be about improving a team around Mac Jones. You have a young quarterback. It's going to be about building around them. But in what way or what specific move do we want to see? I'm going to go first, and I'm going to say – they need to add a wide receiver one. They spent a lot of money off in the last offseason adding weapons. Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, Nelson Aguilar. It was an Aguilar on the team. I'm trying to remember.
Nelson Aguilar was on the team, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they and couple that with like a Jacoby Myers, and they hoped that they brought up the level of competency to
Nikhil
a degree.
Harry?
N'Keal Harry, they still have N'Keal Harry, former first round pick. And they did bring up the level of competency to an extent, enough to be a 10-7 team, enough to help the rookie quarterback lead the team to the playoffs. But if they're going to do anything beyond making the playoffs and losing, they need to get a real wide receiver one. I think their best option is drafting with that 21st pick. I believe they have the 21st pick, using that late first round pick on a wide receiver. That should be a great range to have a number of options at wide receiver. You're not going to probably have one of the top 1, 2, maybe even 3 guys, but this is a great wide receiver class to go address that. So much like you said with the Bills, I think it's even more important for the Patriots because they don't even have a Stephon Diggs. They have nowhere even close to that. They have just a bunch of okay or average guys. They need to get a real weapon for Mac Jones.
No, I 100% agree with you. I think that the wide receiver room is something that they absolutely need to address and expand on. They really haven't had a true number one wide receiver since Randy Moss.
Julian, I count Edelman.
Edelman was a slot guy. I mean, he was a slot guy, but they haven't had a true outside number one since
true Randy. X than Moss. Yeah, for sure.
So I 100% agree with you that they need to do that. I also put down to overhaul the defense, which I know seems silly because the Patriots defense was pretty good.
It wasn't bad.
But it's a Bill Belichick-led defense. Bill Belichick always leads great defenses. It doesn't matter who he has. He figures out how to use those players to his full potential. I think if they can find a way to bring in a star or two to really patch up some things, definitely on the edge, got to bring a sack guy, a guy that's going to apply pressure to the quarterback. He's always been able to put things together in the secondary. If you could bring in a guy on the edge that's going to apply pressure to the quarterback, that's going to absolutely elevate that Patriots defense from great to elite level. So I think that they need to find a way to overhaul the defense with a couple of big names. And I think that they'll be able to do that with free agency.
Yeah. You know, I love the take here. I do think you're right in the area to target, definitely defensive line, right? The secondary is still pretty strong. You know, the linebackers are able to get by, but they could certainly improve the defensive line and continue to throw resources, and adding a potential star player there would be big for New England. Mitch, Miami, AFC East, 9-8. Miami just misses out in the playoffs. They've moved on from Brian Flores. It's Mike McDaniel looking to give Tua Tagovailoa the best opportunity that he has seen so far in his young career. And that, again, talking about young quarterbacks, that is what it's all about. How are you going to put the best situation around your young quarterback? For me, I have a simple answer here. Do what the Chiefs did last offseason with your offensive line. I mean, they traded for Orlando Brown. They drafted Creed Humphrey. They drafted Trey Smith. They added Joe Tooney in free agency. I mean, they did everything they could to guarantee that the offensive line was going to be better than it was in that super embarrassing Super Bowl loss. And the Chiefs did it. They did it. The offensive line was significantly better. Certainly not the reason why they lost that game against Cincinnati in the AFC Championship. So if you're Miami, you want to replicate in some way what the Chiefs did. throwing some resources in the draft there, potentially for high level free agents, like whatever it takes, you need to improve this offensive line significantly. And if you do that, then you're going to be you're actually going to be able to see what Tua Tagovailoa is. We haven't been able to see him to his full extent anywhere close, because the offensive line his entire career has been horrible, and he has all these different coordinators. And like last year, he had two offensive coordinators. He had co-offensive coordinators. Like how is a young player going to develop in that sort of situation? Improve the situation, give him stability, give him time, and you'll actually be able to see if he's a worthwhile asset, if you need to extend him, if he's your quarterback of the future. That is the formula to me for Miami.
Yeah, offensive line, absolutely. I mean, you got to protect the guy. Got to protect the guy. I'm going to go along the lines of still protecting the guy, but in a different fashion. They got to find an RB1. They got to find an RB1. I mean, Miles Gaskin's good. Matt Breida.
He was a great undrafted guy that you got a lot more out of than you would have suspected, right? But he's not a starter option.
Matt Breida did not translate well over from San Francisco. I think they need to find an RB1. And you look at the guys that are free agents this year, because I don't think you're going to be able to do it in the draft. If you're going to do it in the draft, you got to draft the offensive line. I think you have
more
to
more of a priority. Yeah.
Yeah. So you look through the free agency and you look at guys that there's still Melvin Gordon, who's 29. There's Leonard Fournette, who's 27. There's a Philip Lindsay, who's 27. There are guys out there that you can go to have a guy that you can give 220 carries to in a year. You know, you don't have to, they don't have to be a 300 plus carry workhorse like Derrick Henry is, but someone that reliable that you can go to. And there are guys out there. I think they need to add an RB1, and that will only supplement what you, the argument that you were just saying about protecting Tua Tagovailoa. You have to give him a run game to lean on and not just have to trust that he's going to run RPO and throw the ball 40 times a game.
Yeah, 100%. Mitch, to wrap up the AFC East here with the New York Jets, 4-13 on the season. The first year with Zach Wilson, he was injured. In part, you know, during the middle of the season, did look better down the stretch, did look better post injury. And you're hoping to build upon that and again, improve around Zach and improve the situation around him. And this seems like a cop out, but I'm going with the same thing the Dolphins did. Do what the Chiefs did, build the offensive line. That's what it is about for the Jets. I think they could improve adding pass catching options, and they will add another receiver. They could certainly improve at running back, but Michael Carter is promising, and I think Carter with another player could be good enough. The defense is young. They'll still need to add there, but to me, it is protect your quarterback. He was sacked way too often as a rookie, and you're going to develop bad habits, and you're going to stunt his growth, frankly, if you don't protect him early. So get on it, invest in the O-line, free agency, draft. You have two top 10 picks. One of them has to be an offensive lineman, and you go from there. That's what it is for me with New York.
I mean, where do you start? I mean, obviously offensive line, but, like, they need a whole lot of everything else. So I'm just going to stay right on board with you with this one. The offensive line, protect the young quarterback, try to add a wide receiver. They should add a receiver. They will add a wide receiver this offseason.
For sure. Whether it's draft, it could be a free agent. It could be a number of things. Again, two top 10 picks, right? Yeah, they need to
do something. And it starts with the offensive line, and then it starts with the weapons for Zach Wilson. Also not gonna hurt too, because they have Robert Saleh, the head coach, a defensive minded guy. They need to add some defense as well. Defense is not good.
Absolutely.
Jets
need a lot.
They need a lot. They need a lot, but I think you're right on. I think you're spot on with starting with the offensive line and protecting Zach Wilson.
For sure. And speaking of offensive line help, Mitch, we go to the AFC North and start with the Cincinnati Bengals, who just were in the Super Bowl, lost to the Los Angeles Rams. And you think a Super Bowl team, what else, what more could they need? But the Bengals do have some clear improvements to make, and it starts very obviously with the offensive line. And so for the third time in the row, this is the plan for the Bengals. Do what the Chiefs did. It's really easy. You've got a young quarterback and a shitty offensive line. drastically improve the offensive line. Throw resources in free agency and in the draft at the offensive line. It is not going to hurt. You can't have too many offensive linemen because they get hurt and you rotate guys and you need 7 or 8 solid guys. It cannot hurt your team to invest resources at your offensive line, especially when you have a young developing quarterback. So for Joe Burrow, just like Zach Wilson, just like Tua, just like Patrick Mahomes last year, invest upon the offensive line, do whatever it takes, spend that first round pick on an offensive lineman, go sign a big time free agent, go patch some holes, and you could be back here in the Super Bowl next year.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. All on board with you. It's offensive line. We look at Saints offensive tackle Teron Armstead, who is a potential candidate to go to the Cincinnati Bengals. He is the second rated free agent tackle through PFF. Has never earned a PFF grade below 76. Other than that, and that's in a 9-year career. Other than that, Jonah Williams is the only other one to eclipse that mark over the last 5 years. So they have a serious need at the offensive line. And you know what? Free agency is going to be really kind to Cincinnati because they have the third most cap space of any team going into free agency. So,
yeah. And they have a team coming off a Super Bowl with a superstar quarterback that, let me tell you, everybody is going to want to play with Joe Burrow. Undoubtedly. Oh. Joe Cool.
Absolutely.
Everyone's going to be like, I can go to Cincinnati. Get me there. Get me there. Yeah. I'll play whatever, you know, I'll take less. It's fine. I want to go there. That is going to be huge for Cincinnati. Great point there, Mitch. Pittsburgh. This one's easy. We're right on board with it. This is an obvious one. Who is the QB of the future?
Well, it's not Dwayne Haskins. It's not Mason Rudolph. It's someone else. They either need to draft a quarterback that they're willing to put the time into. And if they do it, they got to be patient. If it's a Kenny Pickett or a Matt Corral or whoever it is, they need to be patient with that quarterback. You're not always going to strike gold with Ben Roethlisberger to lead you to a 15-1 season like he did in his rookie year when Tommy Maddox went down. You're not always going to strike gold with that. You have to be patient. Whether it's that or make a move for Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers seems like he's on his way out of Green Bay. Try to make a move. Make a move for Derek Carr. Make a move for someone that is going to put you in a better spot than Mason Rudolph or Dwayne Haskins is going to do. If you're stuck with them, you're talking about a really bad team because they don't have the leadership under center.
Yeah, for the first time in, 18, 19 seasons, the Steelers are facing an offseason where they need to find a new quarterback and a new leader of the franchise. So it is an important offseason for Pittsburgh. Will they go the veteran quarterback route? Will they go rookie quarterback route? There are a lot of options, and some of them could be good, some of them could be bad either way. But no matter what, they need to solve that answer and be committed to that answer one way or another. I'm right there with you, Mitch. For the Cleveland Browns, speaking of quarterback, we're both sort of on board with this one. I'll let you go first. What's the biggest offseason need for the Browns? What's the question here?
I mean, for me, at least, it's that you need to plan for life without Baker. Because he might not be your guy after the end of this year. This guy he's good. He's definitely at least shown to be good backup caliber. But he hasn't proven to be good starting caliber. He hasn't. And we saw him, he had a plethora of weapons to throw to in that Cleveland Browns offense. We saw them improve on the offensive line. They have a solid defense, and Baker just hasn't got it done. And I've kind of been a Baker apologist for a long time, but I'm done apologizing for him. The Cleveland Browns need to plan for life without Baker and maybe draft a quarterback to groom to come in the future and move on from Baker after this year.
Okay.
I think that might be their best. That might be one of their better options that they can do. There's a lot of directions they can go, but that might be one of their better ones.
Okay. So Mitch says prepare for life without Baker. I'm going to take it a step further. You're a QB away now. It's time to make that move. Don't wait till it's too late and you've missed your window and Baker's not as valuable because he's had another bad season. or all of a sudden now Myles Garrett has a major injury and he's never the same. Like, you have a window now. And I think it's safe to say that when healthy, which, to give some credit to the Cleveland Browns, they were not healthy last year. Baker wasn't healthy. The running backs weren't healthy. The offensive line was absolutely gutted to start the season. This team struggled staying healthy last year. It's a huge part of why they finished below 500. But as a roster, they are a quarterback away. They have a roster capable of winning a Super Bowl if they could get the right QB in place. So what are we waiting for? Go make that move. Go make the move. I don't know who's available. I don't know what the move is, but go make the move and don't wait. That is my, that's what I would do if I were the Cleveland Browns. And so we're talking a veteran QB, a guy who can come in and you believe can help you compete for a Super Bowl now. And you make the move away from Baker and you try to maximize this window now, because you built your team the right way. You built your team so that when you had a quarterback on a rookie deal, you had a Super Bowl caliber team. And if that QB hits, you have a Super Bowl team, but it doesn't look like he's hit. So time to hit this window while you got it and don't wait too long. That's where I'm at with Cleveland.
Like it.
Tough days for Baker, man. Those, he's going to have to give the keys back to the stadium, because we know he lives there based on those commercials. You know, so he's going to have to give the keys back, you know, move out. That'll be tough, man. You hate to see it, Mitch.
You hate to see it.
Wrapping up the AFC North here with the Baltimore Ravens, 8-9 on the season. Speaking of injuries, I mean, Cleveland had injuries. Baltimore struggled to stay healthy this year. I mean, everybody got injured for that team and faltered down the stretch, 8-9 on the season. For the Ravens, it's a hard team to judge because, again, if they are healthy, they're a playoff team undoubtedly. The questions are always going to be on Lamar Jackson, his ceiling. What is he really going to do? Finally wins a playoff game, last playoffs, but can he really lead them on a run? My thought here is this. The move to make is solidify your playoff aspirations by improving your defense constantly. Lamar Jackson is a fantastic player. I love Lamar. I have defended him on this podcast and will always do that. But he is a volatile player. When he's on, he's very, very good. When he's not, he's pretty bad. And we've seen his turnovers and his bad decision-making lose games for the Ravens. And so if you're the Ravens and your hopes are a Super Bowl, you want to make sure everything is as good as it can be around him. And to me, having a top five, top 10 caliber defense that can win you playoff games when Lamar is not Lamar, that is the key to having sustained success and actual success in the playoffs if you're Baltimore. So whether it's defensive line, adding in the secondary, like whatever, like just continue to improve defense. The offense, I think, has enough pieces, has a good enough O-line, has enough players when healthy to work for what you have with Lamar, but the defense has got to be on or you don't have a shot.
I like it. I like that. I mean, a little bit of a la 2000s Ravens when they didn't have a super impressive offense, but the defense was legendary. Continue to build on the defense. I 100% agree with you, but I also just threw this note in here. What they need more than anything is health. They need to be healthy. They need these. That's a tough one to gauge because things happen, but like, man, they really cut it bad. But what, they lose their top three running backs within like before week one.
Yes.
So like, you know, it just bad shit happened and you have to learn how to roll with that thing. So they need health. I agree with you. The defense needs to be there. And you know what, when the offense is as banged up as that is, and to your point, when the offense is banged up as it is, a good defense is absolutely what needs to be there to supplement it, because it'll at least hold teams at bay and give your offense an opportunity. So I agree with you, but I think more so than anything, these guys just need to stay healthy, man. They just need something. They need to catch a break.
Yeah, no doubt. Mitch, let's go to the AFC South here and start with the Tennessee Titans. Mitch, the Titans go 12-5 last year, win the AFC South, number one seed in the playoffs, are beat by the Cincinnati Bengals, who went on to the Super Bowl. For the Titans, you know, they suffered a lot of injuries this year, were able to stay through it, and I, you know, earning the number one seed in the AFC, nothing to, you know, slouch at. But at the same time, you know, they're sort of in a position where it's hard to get much better than where they're at. So my note for this offseason is retool for another go. The foundation of this team is there. This is the window for Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry and this team. This is what they've built for, is to compete in this window from 2019 till hopefully for them a couple more years. But in my opinion, I think this was kind of the last year. I'm going to give you an early look at my take on the Titans next year. I'm not going to be optimistic. But if they have any sort of window, it is now. So it's not a time for drastic moves. Your team is what your team is. It's just got to work in the playoffs. So marginal improvements where you can, you know, hitting on your draft picks is going to be huge in that first round draft pick, and adding a real talent, whether it's at the defensive line, whether it's in the secondary, whether it's another wide receiver. To me, it's just as simple as retool for another go. This is your window. You just got to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I kind of equate this to someone who procrastinated on a project. Like, it needed to be done yesterday. So, like, they need to do it now. Like, you're right. The window is quickly closing on the Tennessee Titans. And Derrick Henry is not going to be able to do what he's done forever. Like, he's closing in on his 30s. He's not going to be able to do that forever. They need to
actually
make...
I think they're okay there, Mitch, because they have Donta Foreman, and and he looked, I mean, he did some great Derrick Henry impressions in those last couple of weeks while Henry was out. It was kind of actually uncanny how well he ran, you know, in Henry's. I'm obviously joking, not the same prospect, but maybe they could just easily replace him, it turns out.
I mean, if they're able to do that, good for them. But right. You know, Donta Foreman, other than that little playoff performance, has given me nothing to believe that he could be that kind of guy. Enough. But yeah, you're right. They have to just kind of pony up and get ready for another go. I mean, that's really, and I don't know what that weapon is. The tight end room, I know my boy Jeff Swaim is there. But you know, those are a lot of block first tight ends there. To have a big weapon on you know, on the end that Ryan Tannehill could target would really, really be beneficial to that offense. Yep. Nothing against Jeff. I love Jeff, but he's a block first guy.
Yes.
So.
Him and Fursker. And again, like, I think if you're looking at a spot, and this is something we talked about last offseason, it was a reason why I didn't love their draft last year, that they didn't add this, but another pass catcher, right? They trade for Julio Jones. They have AJ Brown, but that is it. And we saw when those guys struggle with injuries, the wide receiver group that they had to throw out this year when those guys were injured is unacceptable. It's unacceptable for a 12-win team that wants to be in a Super Bowl competing window. It is unacceptable. So you need to add pass catching options. And Julio Jones is not getting any younger. So spending a first round or second round pick on a wide receiver to be a third option, or tight end, as you mentioned, to be a third option, huge for the Titans this year, no
maybe
doubt.
Maybe a Garrett Wilson.
Maybe a Garrett Wilson out of Ohio State, maybe a second round Trey McBride, the tight end out of Colorado State, if you wanted to go that route. So, Mitch, let's go to the Indianapolis Colts here. 9-8, lose in week 18 to the Jacksonville Jaguars to miss out on the playoffs in embarrassing fashion. It seems like the writing is on the wall for Carson Wentz. The team didn't really mince words as far as like the future, and that it's up in the air. They could keep him. They could move on from him. They have no first round pick this year because of him. And it seems like the biggest question is just, frankly, what are they going to do at quarterback? What is your offseason need? Where are you going here with the Indianapolis Colts?
I got to eat a little crow, Dallin. I was awfully high on the Colts with the pairing of Frank Reich and Carson Wentz, and it just didn't work. They need to move on from Carson Wentz. They need to figure something else out at the quarterback position. I don't know what that is. But, you know, outside of the aging, old, semi-untalented wide receiver room, I'm not going to put that on Michael Pittman. Michael Pittman is the most talented wide receiver in that wide receiver room. But they don't have much else around him. They don't have, you know, they have Jonathan Taylor, a stellar run game, but they need to be able to throw the ball as well. And if you don't have the guy under center to do that, it's time to move on. Carson Wentz just clearly isn't that guy. You might look at the numbers, but the numbers will lie to you. The numbers say that he actually played really well, but he made a lot of dumb decisions and got away with a lot of them. So yes. It's time to move on from Carson Wentz. They need to find someone else under center, be the signal caller in that offense. Because Carson Wentz just, quite frankly, isn't the answer.
He ain't it. And, you know, we were both high on it. To give us some credit, I think this was the conversation last offseason. If anybody was going to be able to get the most out of Carson Wentz and redeem him in some sort of way, it was going to be Frank Reich. And this Indianapolis team was the best case scenario.
100%.
And even with a struggling Carson Wentz and an underwhelming year, they were 9-8 and one game out of the playoffs, right? If they make the playoffs, go 10-7 and compete in that opening wild card game, are we having like an entirely different conversation of, well, you got to build around Carson Wentz. He got you to the playoffs, got to give him more pass catchers, got to do this. Are we, you know, it is an interesting thing to think about there, but I mean, I am with you there that Carson Wentz was not it. And Andrew Luck cursed the franchise when he retired and it's time to move back to Baltimore. That's where I'm just kidding. No, but in all seriousness, I am on Indianapolis the way that I'm at in Cleveland. You have a roster that is capable of winning a Super Bowl if you can find the right signal caller, if you have the right quarterback at the helm. And so the Colts need to be doing whatever it takes to find that guy. And I know they have no first round pick because they just traded it for Carson Wentz, but like, time to do it again. Whatever it takes. Like, I don't know what the option is. It might be a fourth rounder for Jimmy G, and you've got Jimmy G and Carson Wentz next year, and you're praying to God it works.
That's
like, I don't know. They're not going to get Aaron Rodgers. They're not going to get Russell Wilson. I don't know what other better options there are, but they need to do something. And outside of that, they need to add another weapon in the pass game alongside Michael Pittman, because he is an emerging young star and a great pickup there, second round pick out of USC a few years ago. But they need a secondary pass catching option alongside it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, first name that came to mind with making the best out of bad weapons is Derek Carr.
And so, that would be an upgrade, and he would be available for not the Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford price, but a more reasonable price potentially. So that would, if he was available, would definitely be an interesting name. I actually kind of like that name. Great run game, so you're not needing to rely on him a lot.
Nope.
Okay. I see you, Mitch. Now I'm like digging this. All right. Well, I'm going to keep that one in the back of my mind. I'm going to think about that one at night. Derek Carr in a Colts jersey. I like that. Mitch, let's go to the Houston Texans. 4-13 this last season. They move on from David Coley. They've brought in Lovie Smith, Davis Mills, the third round quarterback last year out of Stanford, started most of this year. The Texans need a new owner is what they really need.
But, where the hell do you start?
That's not a real offseason need or something they really have control over, finding new ownership. So they need everything. They need foundational pieces, Mitch. That is what it's about. Foundational pieces. That number three pick that you have in the draft, best player available, foundational piece. Don't overthink it. Just get good players everywhere you can. Don't worry about free agency. Those guys are not making an impact, but the draft is huge, and nailing those draft picks are going to be huge for the Texans. That's what it's all about to me. Get guys that you could build your future around.
Yeah, you're at square one. So you got to start somewhere, and I don't know where the hell they want to start. I would start with, if Davis Mills is going to be your guy for the next 2 to 3 years, build the offensive line, give him weapons. At least make him look good, you know, like that's what I would start with, you know? So, but you're right. Foundational pieces, they need to find something. Cause I mean, really you could start anywhere with the Houston Texans.
Perhaps it's almost a blessing in disguise to have such a blank slate in Houston, right? Anywhere to go. And obviously you have the lingering questions about Deshaun Watson.
Are they in a worse position now than what they were when they were an expansion team? Because I feel like they are.
Well, when you add the Deshaun Watson drama to it all and having a Pro Bowl like top five caliber quarterback who just isn't playing for you, didn't want to play for you, and is also now accused of all the stuff he's doing, you might not even get anything for him. Yeah, I mean, if you add that to the on-the-field product, I mean, it's not great.
Not good.
Not great. Good. The ghost of David Carr shakes in Houston.
That poor guy. That poor guy.
Mitch, the final AFC South team here, the Jacksonville Jaguars, hanging out there in the swamps of Jacksonville. And Mitch, this is an easy one. This is an easy one. We're both on board here. It is protect Trevor Lawrence. Mm-hmm. You have again. You see a theme here, guys. We've got over these teams. You have a young quarterback. Build the offensive line. And that's what it's going to be about with the Jacksonville Jaguars. We talked about the mock draft situations, Evan Neal, Ike McQuanu. It seems like they're going offensive line. I think that's the right place to go. You're also going to have a top pick in the second round, and they're going to have a ton of options there to add another fantastic player. But with that 101, take the surefire offensive line and just protect Trevor Lawrence. And then and don't just stop at the draft too. You can also add in free agency. Adding a solid veteran in free agency and selecting an offensive lineman at the 101, coupled with some of the pieces they already have, which aren't horrible, they could get a really good offensive line real quick and drastically improve this team.
I saw a compilation the other day of like the best play that each rookie quarterback made throughout the year. And Trevor Lawrence's literally was a back quarter touchdown throw to Marvin Jones. And it was a great throw off his back foot. But he had like three guys in his face. It has to be offensive line. Go get Ike McQuanu or Evan Neal, whatever you feel like is your best option. Ike McQuanu, I'm pretty high on. So, I mean, go get the offensive line. You could add it in free agency, but also give him another weapon. There is a guy out there right now that I think we're all going to sleep on that I know we're talking about, but we're going to sleep on. Chris Godwin's an unrestricted free agent this year. And this is a guy that fits fits that offense. Go get Chris Godwin, a big weapon, a good weapon that is deserving of being a number one wide receiver. Put him in Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence, improve the offensive line, and you might have something there. A little nugget to build on, at least.
I love that. And hey, we wouldn't have to move very far, right? Just the other side of Florida there, going from the Bay.
Might be attracted to Chris Godwin. Yeah, you don't have to move very far. Yeah. Great move for Chris Godwin.
No state, the Florida state tax situation is great. People love that. You want to stay there? Sounds good to me. I love that, bitch. Final division here with the AFC West. And let's start with the Kansas City Chiefs, who went 12-5 this past season, lost in the AFC championship game, hosted their fourth straight AFC championship game. We'll see if they make it 5 in a row this upcoming season. But for the Chiefs, I mean, this is a team that is just kind of right there, but at the same time, I do think the Chiefs have some very obvious weaknesses. And you talked about rehauling the defense for the Patriots. This is what I'm doing with the Chiefs. Rehaul the defense because they don't really have much. They have Chris Jones. They have Tyrann Mathieu. They've got some good young linebackers, right? Nick Bolton, Willie Gay.
Fred Warner.
They spend some. Who? I'm talking about that. You said Fred Warner. That's the Niners.
Oh, sorry. Wrong red team. Sorry.
Yeah, you're good.
Cancel that out.
Yeah, you're fine. So they have invested into some young players, but their cornerback situation is awful. Their defensive line is awful. They're paying Frank Clark like $20 million. He's going to be a cut casualty. So they need to add a D-line. They need to add in the secondary. They could improve their safety position. They need to rehaul this defense quick, and they need to draft well. I mentioned Jalen Petrie earlier as my pick for them in the late first round, who I think would fit in perfectly in a great role and in a great need for them. But they need to do more along this defense. The offense is going to be good with Patrick Mahomes. They have weapons. They have proved the offensive line this last offseason. Now it's time to look at the future of the defense, which has just continued to regress over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on board with you. The defense needs to get better. The defense absolutely needs to get better. A rehaul of the defense is definitely a great decision here. I think they also, and this is just kind of to supplement your point of what they actually need to do on defense, they need to find a wide receiver to complement Tyreek Hill. because they don't have anyone outside of Tyreek. Mecole Hardman, yeah, he's fast, probably a great special teamer. Byron Pringle and DeMarcus Robinson, they have their moments, but that's it. They're not a reliable source. They need someone outside of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce to be a good outside receiver, a reliable option. A Chris Godwin comes to mind. That might be a fit there.
That would be, wow. Godwin, Hill, Kelce. I mean, is that too spoiled?
Yeah, and you know what? I know the Chiefs don't have all the cap room in the world to build.
Right, right.
So Chris Godwin might not be available for him. But
is it about? Yeah, so I have a question. I think it's about a complementary piece, right, to Hill. Like, they have Hill and Kelce are great, but like Hill does some specific things really well.
He's a burner.
Yards
he's
after catch, the deep threat aspect, but a more possession receiver. A guy that you could consistently hit
underneath, like Kelce does
as a tight end, but at the wide receiver position, maybe a more of a red zone threat, a bigger target, that Mahomes can target in the red zone, somebody with some height to him. I think they could diversify there for sure.
Or, if we talk about height and red zone threat, why not an Allen Robinson?
And that's great. You're going to get him for cheaper. Yeah. He's a guy who probably just wants to win, could come in for a couple $1 million. And he would fill a role that isn't that complements what they have in Hill and Kelce. So if you're going to go wide receiver, which again, I mean, obviously Hill and Kelce, there's probably not a better duo out there as far as pass catchers.
Right.
You can improve it. And I think the Rams were a great example this year. They had Robert Woods, they had Cooper Kupp, and they traded for OBJ. Why? Because you can never have enough options in this world of the NFL that we live in, and you never know who's going to be healthy. And it turned out it was the absolute best decision they could make because Robert Woods went down and they didn't miss a beat. So I don't think you're wrong thinking in that route, Mitch. Let's go to the Las Vegas Raiders here, who finished 10-7, made the playoffs with interim head coach Rich Bisaccia. They've gone with Josh McDaniels out of the New England Patriots in a new era in Las Vegas. I think it's time to move on from Derek Carr. I think there's a lot of reasons. I think he's too good, and he's also not good enough. I think he's too good to tank. He's too good to we can lose a bunch of games and be bad. He's too good for that. He's going to bring your team to a level of competence, that's going to take you out of the top 10 of the NFL draft. I don't think, though, he's good enough to carry the roster they have now to anything beyond 10 wins and a wild card appearance. So if that's the purgatory you're living in, which is pick 12 to 22 in the NFL draft and always kind of be in the middle, then you need to move on. And I think it's time for the Vegas Raiders to do a hard reset. So trade Derek Carr to a team that needs an improvement at quarterback. Be bad this year. And give yourself a shot at a new quarterback next year when Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, and who knows who else will be available in what should be a better quarterback class. So that's where I'm at with the Raiders. That's where I'm at. And it sucks because I like Derek Carr, and I think this is a good team. And they could be a playoff team for the next couple of years if they continue this. But I do think there's a clear ceiling. And with the way that the roster is built, it's not good enough to win with Derek Carr right now. So you need to do something else.
I mean, I would have to agree with you, except for the fact that what has Derek Carr had at his disposal other than Darren Waller? What has he had?
I'm not blaming him. That's what I'm saying, Mitch. I'm saying because the roster isn't good enough around him.
So yeah, exactly. So if you build the roster around Derek Carr, you're unlocked.
I don't think they have the ability to do that. They don't have enough money to do that. And frankly, they don't have enough time to do that. They have too many holes in this roster that in a year or two, they could just patch it and be a Super Bowl caliber team. I think they've built this team poorly, and they've reached that ceiling of what it could be with Derek Carr right now. And if it takes enough time to build it back up, he's not going to be the same quarterback 3 or 4 years from now.
I'll tell you why they don't have the money to build around Derek Carr is because they spent too much money on old, washed up defensive players.
They did a poor job team building.
And that's so it's not Derek Carr's
fault. No, of course not. And I want to make that adamantly clear. I'm not blaming Derek Carr at all. That's why I'm saying he's too good and he's not good enough at the same time.
So to all you Raiders fans who hate on Derek Carr for not being good enough, no, it's because your organization sucks.
Yes.
Speaking of spending money on old washed up players, they spent way too much money on old washed up defensive backs that aren't there anymore, and they need to build on the interior defensive line. They have the edge. Max Crosby, Carl Nassib, mix Cleveland Farrell in there. He's a great third option as an edge guy. They have talent there. Build the interior defensive line to plug up the middle and stop the run game. I think that if you stop in conjunction with that, if you stop spending money on old DBs and start signing someone that's actually relevant and going to be useful to your team, then maybe you start being successful. And Derek Carr doesn't look that bad.
Yeah.
Because you actually give him a defense.
I think that's a great place to go if you're going to keep Carr and not, you know, do the more drastic measures that I recommended. And if you are going to do all that as well, and you're going to keep Carr, add a wide receiver one. Okay. Ruggs didn't work out. You know, it is what it is. You have Hunter Renfro, great slot receiver. You have a great tight end in Waller. You got to give an extra, you got to get an extra receiver out there. You got to get a true receiver out there. And if you add that, you find the right guy, all of a sudden, that's pretty good. All of a sudden, you've improved that drastically. So if you're going to keep Carr, and even if you're not, you know, go try to find that wide receiver one, I think.
And they are picking number 22. They are picking
great spot for wide receiver as well.
And I know that he's going to be out, but Jameson Williams has a ton of talent. I know he's out with the ACL right now, but he has a ton of talent and maybe someone worth investing in. So
for sure. Mitch, the Los Angeles Chargers 9-8 on the season, missed the playoffs in the year two of Justin Herbert. We're continuing to see his improvement, his growth. He is one of the special young quarterbacks in this league. And again, it's going to be around building around him. They did invest in the offensive line, and the offensive line is solid. Rashawn Slater, they spent a draft pick on him. He is a star. They signed Corey Linsley in the offseason. And so the offensive line is pretty good around Justin Herbert. It's going to be about other places. In my mind, they need to add a wide receiver in this draft, and it is regardless of whether they bring back Mike Williams or not. They could franchise tag Mike Williams, could become a free agent. We're not really sure the situation yet, but regardless of whether they bring back Williams or not, they need to add another wide receiver, and they need to add him in the first round of the draft. You brought up Jameson Williams. That is the fit I love with the Los Angeles Chargers at number 17, I believe they draft somewhere in that range. Wide receiver there to pair with Keenan Allen, to pair with your young quarterback and Justin Herbert. He needs a real option. And if you bring Mike Williams back, all the better. But that's my big one, my main focus for the Chargers this offseason.
Yeah, I think that interior defensive line, again, is going to be the answer for the Los Angeles Chargers. Look, they have Joey Bosa on the outside. He's an all pro. He's a guy that is going to rack up the sacks and apply pressure to the defense. But you know what? They run a too high defense, and you need some guys that stuff the middle. They just lost Linval Joseph to free agency. They haven't had a really great interior guy. I know I see a name keep being thrown out, and I'm going to continue to say that he's a bust, but Jordan Davis from Georgia is kind of that first guy that gets thrown out.
He's a popular mock for the Chargers specifically there in the mid first. And I don't love it either.
He just seems like a refrigerator. He's William Perry. You know, he is the guy that the Bears drafted in 84.
How many snaps is that guy playing? I'm just, you know what I mean? It's like, how many snaps is he realistically going to play?
I mean, you saw some film on
worth it in the first round. Like, I know he's a,
you saw some film on that. You saw some film on that guy, and he was dogged after two plays. Right. I mean, the guy was just winded. Like, so that he can't be a three down guy for you. He just can't. So, I don't know what the answer is there, but interior defensive line to compliment Joey Bosa defensively is definitely a move they should be looking
for. That's a good spot. All right, final team here this week in the AFC. We'll hit on the NFC team offseason needs on next week's podcast, but we'll end here with the Denver Broncos. 7-10 on the season, missing the playoffs with Teddy Bridgewater at the helm, Mitch. And the question all offseason is going to be about quarterback and what they do at QB. What is your answer here? What is the offseason move that they need to make? What's the play here for the Broncos?
Okay. I cannot emphasize this enough. Do everything you can to get Aaron Rodgers. Sell the farm. I mean, do whatever you got to do. You have the young wide receiver core. You have a good defense. You have a good young running back in Javonte Williams. You have everything around him. You are a quarterback away from being a pretty damn good offense. Drew Lock isn't the answer. Teddy Bridgewater isn't the answer. Whoever you got under center isn't the answer. Do everything you can. And you know what? At this point, overpay for Aaron Rodgers. Because if they get Aaron Rodgers, this is a Super Bowl contending team. And I'm dead serious when I say that. That is not a hot take. I think that's a pretty mild take. You are a quarterback away. You need to get Aaron Rodgers. The only reason you've looked so bad is because your quarterback play has been that bad. The defense is there. The weapons is there. Go get Aaron Rodgers at all costs.
You know, Denver obviously has to make a move at quarterback somewhere. Whether it's drafting a quarterback with, I believe they have the 9th pick in the draft, or it's trading for a veteran, which seems the more likely route here. I'm going to push back a bit, and I am in disagreement on believing that the Denver Broncos roster is in the same way that we talk about the Browns and the Colts already here on this podcast, a quarterback away. I'm going to push back on that a bit because those other teams have had average to below average quarterback play, and we've still seen those teams be really good. I don't think Denver has been all that impressive outside of the quarterback play, not in the same way as with other teams. And it's certainly adding Aaron Rodgers. Certainly adding Aaron Rodgers to any team would make them the Super Bowl contender because it's Aaron Rodgers. And I think that's fair. I am just not going to buy it in the same way that other people will if it does happen. And I'm not going to buy that it's a similar situation to Tampa Bay the way that people did when Tom Brady went there, because that was also a non-playoff team who was pretty bad up until the point. And then they get Tom Brady and all of a sudden they win a Super Bowl. And you could argue that the Denver Broncos adding Aaron Rodgers would be a very similar situation and could potentially have a different outcome. But I'm going to push back on that.
But that's a different scenario. Tom Brady was 5 years older. He was 42 when he wound up in Tampa Bay. That's a different scenario than a 37-year-old Aaron Rodgers who probably has 4 good years left under his belt.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's not about Aaron Rodgers. That's not why I don't think – I'm talking about the Denver Broncos roster. I'm not going to buy that they are just a quarterback away. I'm not believing
that
with a first-year quarterback – with a first-year head coach, excuse me, from the Packers and Hackett, and guys who are relatively unproven in the playoffs. I mean, they don't have the Super Bowl holdovers from 2015. Von Miller's gone, right? These guys are gone. This is a brand new team, a lot of young players. And sure, if you add Aaron Rodgers, it's going to be a playoff team, like undoubtedly. But I am pushing back on the notion that you just add him and it's a Super Bowl contender and we just pencil it in and here we go. They're competing with the Chiefs.
He would be working with Nathaniel Hackett, who's worked with him for multiple years in Green Bay, with a good, solid young wide receiver core of Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. He's got a young running back in Javonte Williams. I'm not saying they're going to go out and win a Super Bowl in their first year like Tom Brady did.
Right.
But that instantly puts them in a contender in the contender conversation. And you give him a year or two in that system with a guy that he's familiar with working with in Green Bay, you're looking at a Super Bowl favorite in two or three.
Well, in a couple years, sure. But we're talking about next season. And again, I am just pushing back on the notion that it automatically makes them this top tier AFC team.
But I don't think there's a move. I don't think there's a move that the Broncos could make that puts them over the edge for next season, other than Aaron Rodgers.
Of course.
And
of course.
Two years out.
Aaron Rodgers is the best move they can make. That's the best case scenario, right, for the Broncos. And as you said, it's the answer. It's you got to do whatever it takes to get Aaron Rodgers. I'm with you there. Obviously, the quarterback position needs to be addressed. And they cannot go into it with whatever they have or just another Band-Aid like a Teddy Bridgewater. Again, all I'm saying is I am just going to wait on buying the Broncos as a Super Bowl contender with Aaron Rodgers on board until we see some games, until we see some stuff. I'm not buying it immediately, but I understand why you will, and I understand why everyone else will. But certainly, I mean, the Broncos, this is easy. They got to get a quarterback, and frankly, they got to get Rodgers. It just kind of seems like that's the only answer, right?
He wants to be West Coast again. I mean, he wants to be closer to home, and
I mean,
why
Denver's not really West Coast. It's certainly more West than Green Bay.
It's closer than Green Bay, but like, no, yeah, the Raiders aren't going to take him. Niners aren't going to take him. So, you know, what else has he got to do?
There certainly aren't many options now at this point. So, Mitch, that's it for the AFC offseason needs. Again, we'll address the NFC team by team on next week's podcast. But for now, we're going to wrap this up. So we appreciate you sticking around and listening. If you don't already, follow our socials. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, the TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lil Thoint. Check out the website if you haven't already, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. You can find our latest blogs there. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
And Casey forgot. Anchor is the only place that you could become a part of the conversation. Go to anchor.fm/thesportshourguys and become a part of the conversation. Guys, you can leave a voice message on there. Did you know if you leave a voice message on there, we'll play that message right here on the show, and you're a part of the conversation. We will answer your question that you have, whatever it is. It could be, hey, Dallin, what's your favorite flavor of their smoothie? Hey, Dallin. You know, what's your favorite kind of music? Hey, Mitch, what color underwear are you wearing right now? It could be that. I'll be honest. Right now, it's gray. I will tell you that right now. So you know what? Go on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. Become a part of the conversation. If you like this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Get on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating, review. Tell us that we suck. Because, Dallin, that is the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better. We really do encourage you to go on Anchor and leave us that voice message and interact with us however you can. We would greatly appreciate it. So, Mitch, it's been a pleasure, as always. More to come here on the Sports Hour. We look forward to it. It's always a great time. Moving this to Wednesdays, it's officially official. We're doing this on Wednesdays now. All right. Yep. That doesn't matter to you, the listeners, other than maybe when it comes out. But for Mitch and I, it's very important in my scheduling. Got to talk to my secretary, get that penciled in, you know, so we'll get that squared away and taken care of.
Yeah. I want to make sure I'm not taking up too much of your time, President Graf. So
yes, that is true. I'm a very busy man. Guys, listen, thanks for listening again. Coming back every week, much appreciated. We love you, we appreciate you, and we will catch you next week.
See ya!